It is intriguing that after living half his life in Europe, Goody remained a man of New Orleans in many ways. He retained traits and habits idiosyncratic to Louisiana in his manners, taste in food, pride of tradecraft and speech. Before his California years, Big Boy had been a multi-instrumentalist, favoring the tenor saxophone for three decades. But before that, 1915 to 1920, he'd been a jazz trumpet player in New Orleans, good enough to work in a couple of the better bands, Magnolia and Papa Celestin's Tuxedo Orchestra. In the early 1920s, Goody left New Orleans and went on the road, playing in a wide range of bands and entertainments. His travels took him far west to Texas, New Mexico, and California, and south for work in Tampico, Mexico. And there, New Orleans trumpet player Charlie Love might have helped him polish his mature horn style. During the 30s in Paris, Frank Goody made five trumpet records. Now rare curiosities, they're nonetheless impressive demonstrations of his playing two and even three instruments on the same disc, a very difficult trick. Now I was particularly curious if Big Boy was influenced by the American expat trumpeters he knew in Paris. So I recently asked Chris Tile, an accomplished trumpet player who's researched New Orleans jazz, about Goody's trumpet style. Because Tile also doubles on horns and reeds like Goody, he's keenly aware of the challenges.
He wasn't playing trumpet all the time. This is what I get from the recordings. But the fact is that he sounds very much in the style of a New Orleans trumpet player. So in other words, comparing him to his contemporaries, the other guys that were playing in Paris at that time, I find that his playing has a lot more of a, let's say, a rougher edge to it. If you're not playing an instrument all the time, which I'm assuming that he wasn't, it's difficult to pick it up and just play it and then go back to the reeds. That's one of the things that I can certainly tell, because I play reeds also. It's very difficult to go back and forth between those two. But as far as his style is concerned, definitely he leans more towards a New Orleans type style. And I think that probably by the time we're hearing him in Paris in the 30s, that style was pretty much set. I don't think he was being influenced by contemporaries. I think he was pretty much, he played the way he played. He plays a phrase on St. Louis Blues. He plays it on the clarinet. And then in the tune Blues for Yesterday, he plays the same phrase. And it's a phrase that I've heard New Orleans players play before. There's a recording called Blues for Jimmy that Kid Ory did, and Mutt Carey plays the phrase. And then there's a piece of music that's called Clarinet Lament that featured Barney Bigard with Duke Ellington's band, and they start the tune with that particular phrase. It might have been some sort of a New Orleans, I don't know quite how to put it, like it's some kind of code or something. It's also part of a tune that Manuel Mineta wrote called Old New Orleans Blues that is supposedly themes that were taken from things that he heard as a young man in New Orleans. But I find it very interesting that Goody plays it on both of the recordings. Moody's playing is sort of it's an interesting combination of things. I hear the sort of New Orleans approach, but I also hear the influence of Louis Armstrong. There's times when he does things in the upper reaches of the trumpet where it's definitely Armstrong-inspired playing. Even though he left, like many other musicians, I think he was keeping abreast of what was going on as far as his contemporaries. The things that he's showing on the records are more indicative of the type of things that Armstrong was doing. So more like what he's doing on, let's say, Darktown Strutter's Ball. He's playing a more straight-ahead type of New Orleans style.
I think Darktown Strutter sounds the best, just as an overall lead. And my theory there is that he's leading it a lot like a New Orleans trumpet lead.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
I think that's definitely where I would go, too. I think the only time he sort of veers off course, and it may be that was what he intended, is on the out chorus of Darktown Strutter's Ball, where he's almost like soloing on that rather than playing a real straight-ahead sort of lead for a band. The part in the tune where it says, I'm going to dance off all my shoes, da-da-da-da-da. I was listening to Goody play it, where he goes, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I thought, you know, I've heard that somewhere before, and I pulled out Bunk's record of it. And Goody plays a very similar sort of variation on the lead as Bunk did.
Fascinating.
Which I thought is kind of interesting, since Goody's recording was from the 30s and Bunk's recording was from the 40s. So I think that might have been a little variation that was a part of the New Orleans musical vocabulary on that tune. It's obviously more of a New Orleans style than what I would consider to be a swing style of that time.
I consider it his best trumpet recording.
It's hard for me to say best because I find that they're all very interesting. You know, each one has got something that makes it interesting for me. If his tone sounds really good on one recording and doesn't sound quite as nice on another recording, it could simply be down to the fact that he was doubling or didn't quite have the embouchure the way he would have liked it to be. And
I get it, okay.
Because of the doubling thing, it could be that particular track, the one that you're recalling where he doesn't sound all that great, that could have been like the last track recorded of the day and he'd been switching back and forth between the two.
Yeah, that's possible.
Two or three instruments, and it could be taking its toll.
I get it, okay.
His reed playing won't suffer from the trumpet playing, but it's the trumpet playing that's gonna suffer from the reed playing.
Trombone player Bob Mielke.
The Monkey Inn was in Berkeley. It, like the Burp Hollow, had sawdust on the floor. Got pretty rowdy sometimes. We played there, the Bill Erickson Quartet, featuring Big Boy Goody and myself, for many years.
It was a student hangout for UC students, including fraternity guys and so on their first beer bouts. It could get pretty lively and at times a bit rough. It was definitely a let-your-hair-down kind of place.
On the West Coast in the late 50s, his gifts as a clarinet player blossomed. He had a rich, husky tone with relaxed, flowing lines, and was equally comfortable supporting a New Orleans-style ensemble or soloing at length. In small combos like these Monkey Inn tapes, Frank let his hair down. Dropping the Creole professor routine, he strode out on long, loping, expressive solos with fire and a clear sense of purpose and direction. Also present on occasion at the Monkey Inn was trumpeter Jerry Blumberg, a versatile and intriguing musician who'd synthesized an appealing style encompassing the grit of early New Orleans jazz and rich harmony of modern swing.
Heard these after many years, I was astonished at how wonderful Erickson sounded. I knew he was a good player, but I didn't know he was that good. He had two manners of playing. One was when a bass player is present in the group. That was kind of a light Teddy Wilson sort of style. But if there were no bass player, then he came on like gangbusters with a strong left hand. And that's what's evident on these tapes from the Monkey Inn, that he was trying to be a real rhythm section unto himself. It's really strong, and it surprises me. He was better than I remembered him being.
Thank you.
Frank Big Boy Goody playing trumpet and clarinet on his 1935 recording of I Found a New Baby. We segued to that from an archive performance from the early 60s. Goody with Bill Erickson piano, Bob Mielke trombone, Jerry Blumberg trumpet, and James Carter was the fine drummer on those tapes from the Monkey Inn. In many ways, Goody's life parallels the development of jazz itself, its early origins in New Orleans and worldwide diffusion, transition to swing and fusion with Latin music, and the post-war revival. Discovering Frank Big Boy Goody continues because there's a forthcoming biography, and the Jazz Rhythm website contains a complete music archive, profiles of his associates from New Orleans, Paris, Rio, and the West Coast, and the first survey of his life and music. At Jazz Hot Big Step, that's all one word, jazzhotbigstep.com. Look for the pages labeled Frank Goody. My great thanks to the musicians who shared their memories and comments. Bob Mielke, the late Bill Barden, William Carter, Chris Tile, and Richard Hadlock. Thanks also to Mielke, Hadlock, and the San Francisco Traditional Jazz Foundation for rare music tracks. And Goody's words were read by Kenneth Gant. Jazz Rhythm is produced by Rhythm Productions, offering professional restoration of rare tapes and discs to digital. Writer, broadcaster, and musician Richard Hadlock got to know Goody pretty well in the early 60s and interviewed him for the San Francisco Examiner in mid-1963.
Two things are very important in playing jazz. First, you have to study your instrument right from the first page of the book. Second, you must always have a melody line. Without a melody of some kind, no one can perceive what is happening, and it becomes meaningless.
Estuary Jazz Group now, and just a closer walk with thee.
As we close with this early stereo broadcast of the West Coast traditional jazz supergroup Estuary Jazz Band, I've asked Richard Hadlock to read his 1964 eulogy from the San Francisco Examiner. We've been hearing excerpts of it throughout the hour, but I wanted him to read it.
I haven't looked at this in 40-some years, probably.
Because it illustrates the warm personal feeling that was expressed by each and every one of the musicians that I'd talked to who'd known Frank Goody.
Goody was not one of the great jazz men. He never pretended to be. But I think most of us who knew him felt we had a great deal to learn from his example. Unlike some of the most celebrated musicians who can become so involved in jazz that outside reality ceases to exist for them, Goody was a true man of the world. It's said as a man rather than as a musician that I think of him now. 6.5 feet of serenity and homegrown wisdom, a born gentleman, one of the last of the old school. When he played, the clarinetist gave it everything he had, no matter how many fumbling amateurs might be blowing alongside him. Jazz was a vital force in Goody's life. Few musicians his age, he was 64, were ever more eager to play. Thank you. I think the greatest lesson he bequeathed to those who go on living the jazz life was simply that people are more important than music. Frank Goody left us with the image of a man who possessed far more important qualities: dignity, integrity, compassion, gentleness, a thirst for knowledge and a love of life as it really is. He'll be missed.
Thank you to Richard Hadlock for rereading that 1964 eulogy. And that's Discovering Frank Big Boy Goody on Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for listening.